If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to another weekend with Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take a look at the world of theater and music and art, which we love to do here on Saturdays and Sundays. Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. following Mike Toomey's fantastic Laugh Track show, and we repeat again on Sunday at 4 p.m. before we hit the webs. Joining me for the first part of this show, if I were to ask you name, you know, five famous groups, bands in the history of music, maybe one of the ones you would say will be, well, the Grateful Dead. And if there was somebody from the Grateful Dead that I said, name one person from the Grateful Dead, you'd go, well, Jerry Garcia, hello. Exactly. And now there's a new music venue in Chicago recently opened up, and it is a tribute, and in many ways an honor to the life, the times, and the interests of the famous Jerry Garcia, who sadly left us some years ago. But joining me to talk about this is Jesse Lauder, and he is a, I don't know what you don't do, Jesse. You're a music documentarian, a film director, music producer, mix engineer, and I know that if we were in a club and you were the DJ, I would get to simply call you Uncle Jesse.
You got that right. That was one heck of an introduction, Paul. Thank you.
So how do you go from all that? And of course, I should also say you're head of production and media for Dayglow Presents. That's really what's taking you into Garcia Chicago, right?
Correct. Yes, that is correct. Yeah, I work full time for Peter Shapiro. If you don't know who Peter is, the people of Chicago might know him from bringing the Fare Thee Well 50th anniversary concerts of the Grateful Dead to Soldier Field. That was, God, it feels like yesterday and forever ago when that happened, but that was 10 years ago.
Wow.
July 4th weekend, 2015. But Peter is a promoter. Many people call him the modern day Bill Graham. And I am his head of production for his company, Dayglow Presents. And this vision of opening a club dedicated to the legacy and life of Jerry Garcia really started with him and the Jerry Garcia family.
At Garcia himself, first of all, let's talk about the venue, because that's really what we want people to go check out. It's at 1001 West Washington. GarciaChicago.live is the website for it. But it's a 300-seat theater venue, and it's a restaurant. Talk to me about how it actually celebrates the life, the music, and the cultural impact of Jerry Garcia.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I think the thing that's maybe most interesting about this project is that there's a lot of provenance and history to it. This was actually something that Jerry had talked about himself doing around the timeline, around the late 80s, early 90s. Sadly, it never came to fruition because of his untimely passing. But he wanted to make a club and maybe some clubs around the country.
And by the way, and he wanted to call them Casa Garcia, right?
Casa Garcia, correct. That was the name of it. And a little, you know, something that I don't know if it's really made the press, but he was talking to Kimpton, about the Kimpton family, about doing it with them. That's like loosely who he was discussing doing this project with. So, you know, one could probably make an educated guess. The first one would have been in San Francisco, but one could guess, since the Kimpton family was based in Chicago, that they probably would have opened one in Chicago. Anyway, but that being said, this was something he wanted to do. And his family, you know, they were not only musicians, but they were in the bar business. So
his dad owned a bar, right? His mom took over?
Dad owned a bar, and when he passed away, his mother took it over. It was called Joe Garcia's. It was in San Francisco, in the area that I think, you know, a lot of people who know San Francisco know it as Soma, south of Market, near Rincon Hill. And I'm from San Francisco, so this project has been really cool for me because there's a lot of odes not only to Jerry but to San Francisco and in the history of the city, especially in the, you know, early part of the 20th century. That said, so there's this whole kind of backstory with Jerry's, you know, family being in the hospitality bar business, him kind of wanting to do something like this himself, and us kind of realizing this vision, you know, for the first time in creating a restaurant and venue in his honor. And what we really wanted to do was make it a place that wasn't just so blatantly, you know, obvious. We've been saying we don't want to call it Hard Rock Jerry Garcia or Planet Hollywood Jerry Garcia. We really wanted it to be a cool place where, you know, you maybe might learn something about him that you might not have known We have little Easter eggs planted throughout the whole space. Graphic novels and sci-fi novels that Jerry loved. Jerry's record collection is what we like to call it, records that, and then musicians that we know he adored. And also family photos. That's kind of one of the coolest things. At the end of one of the bars is a photo that's and no one's ever seen before outside of his family, of his father, Joe. And there's a ton of stuff. If you look at the bar, you'll see a ton of photos that just have never been seen before. So this was just like a really cool opportunity to, pay homage to someone that has had such an effect on all of humanity and seemingly has gotten more popular in death. It's just wild to see the.
He's never gone away. I had mentioned before we started, I was going to wear one of my Jerry Garcia ties. I mean, he was into everything. Let's talk about how it shows up here. I know his daughter Trixie is on board, and other family members are into this and doing this. It did open, by the way, on March 21st. So you have a little bit of time behind you to get things working as you want to. But I know that he had kind of a Spanish roots background, grew up in California, but he also loved comfort food. How does that translate to the menu? I know it's the design of Chef Abram Bissell, who calls it nostalgic and unexpected. So what kind of things are we going to order?
Abram was our consulting chef, and Chef Ivy Carthen is our executive chef, who's a Chicago native. And so Ivy's on the ground. Abram helped develop the menu. It's been a really amazing thing, creating a menu that, when you have a project like this, you're like, okay, well, how are we going to create a menu that is Jerry, And so, the idea was to create something sort of biographical, but also something that reflected his taste. So yes, we had two very obvious things we could have played from his Spanish heritage and also his San Francisco roots, two culinary capitals, no question about it. San Francisco is an amazing eating city. Maybe, I don't know, Chicago, obviously
Well,
very.
yeah, we're not gonna. I'm not gonna grant you that San Francisco better than Chicago, but I understand.
It's and there's different cuisines in San Francisco too
Right.
that but as we know, very famous restaurants in the 70s like Chez Panisse and Zuni and these places that have had huge effects on the culinary world, from San Francisco. Alice Waters being, from the Bay Area and was kind of like around when the dead was becoming the thing. So we have that to play with. We have the Spanish stuff to play with, but the guy liked diner food. He liked a greasy spoon.
So do
How
I.
do we make a success? Well, how do we make a restaurant that's gonna like, at least break even and still pay, do that? And like, we're gonna have to have burgers and shakes. And Jerry loved milkshakes. Love milkshakes. He loved sugary drinks. So we really went for it on the milkshakes. My personal favorite milkshake on the menu is our strawberry vanilla combo milkshake. And the reason we did that was because Justin Kreutzmann, the son of drummer Bill Kreutzmann of the Grateful Dead, who is a fabulous person and filmmaker and was very helpful to me in this whole process, told me this amazing story that before a show once he was walked into Jerry's dressing room and Jerry's got a vanilla milkshake and he's got a strawberry milkshake. And Justin was like, why are you drinking both? He said, it's the best thing about being a rock star, Justin. You don't have to choose. So we're
Yeah.
like, that's a great story. And so we made the strawberry and vanilla milkshake because of that.
Are
He,
these stories like in the menu? I mean, when you know it, do you have to kind of just know these stories, or do you read the menu and
I,
see some of these tidbits?
some of these tidbits, maybe made it into the press, but a lot of it, I was calling people. I talked to Steve Parrish and, my question to Steve, who was Jerry's longtime, road manager, basically knew every move Jerry made since 1970 or 71, whenever he started working with the Dead. And he, I obviously could ask him about his dietary habits. And I was like, Steve, like, what's the one thing that needs to be on the menu according to you? And he's like, there has to be a roast beef sandwich. So one of our, prime dishes is the roast beef sandwich, the Jerry roast beef. So things like that, when we were collecting those anecdotes from the people who knew him best, like it was like, yeah, that there you go. So,
I do want to talk to you, shift a little bit and talk about the music because
yes.
it's so. I just looked at the schedule of what's coming up in June, July, and going, it's so eclectic. I mean, some things you would expect, and some things. When you think of the Grateful Dead, but some things you just wouldn't. So I'm just going to toss a couple out. I can't wait for the Preservation Hall Jazz Band in June. That I'm so into that. But Howlin' Bowling, Matteo Mancuso, Leo Kottke, it's folk. It's all over the place. Jerry was more than the Grateful Dead, I guess is the way to put it.
No question, an extremely eclectic artist, and we wanted to make sure that the booking and the programming reflected his eclectic tastes. Even when you go there and there isn't a band on stage, the house playlist, if we're not playing Jerry Garcia band, we're probably playing the music that he loved. He loved Django Reinhardt. He loved flamenco music, but he also loved R&B and soul and Motown and jazz. And so we just really wanted to make sure that our programming really reflected, the diversity and taste that he really encompassed. And, all you got to do is go to the Jerry Garcia band and listen to, the songs that they covered, or and just look at the songs they covered. He was covering reggae songs. He's covering old folk traditional songs. He was not limited in scope. I mean, he wasn't making pop songs, but he was, in the greater sphere. He was, playing Americana. He was Americana, if there's any other way of putting it, I don't know. He really just encompassed this whole the whole world of music and talent and just like a joie de vivre, just like loving life and like and that's to me is like what made him so special and why so many people could connect with his music. And so we really wanted to make sure that our booking reflected that in his
And you're
eclectic.
like the perfect guy for this because looking at your history, working to help produce the Bob Dylan music of the 80s and Leon Russell and Scarlett Johansson, Stephen Stills, Judy Collins, you're all over the map too. So you'd be perfect. If Jerry is looking down and watching this club, so assuming he's sitting down front with a roast beef sandwich and a chocolate vanilla strawberry shake in front of him, and he's in a 300 seat venue, he looks at you and he goes, Jesse, here's my thought.
Well, I don't think I could predict what Jerry would say. I think he would probably just nod and go, "This is a good milkshake." I will say this though, one of the for me, the family's happiness, like you said earlier, that Trixie was involved. The family is involved, the Jerry Garcia family, which is the estate, Trixie, Annabelle, Sunshine Kesey, and Trixie came out for the opening, and I've been friends with Trixie a long time, and I wanted to make sure she was happy with this, and she was very involved in, the development and our thought process around the creative development of the project, and but I didn't know how she'd react when she came, and she was thrilled, and that meant the world to me, and to me, if I, obviously we want everyone to be happy, but this is her, their father and his legacy. And, they've been working very hard and tirelessly to preserve it and protect it. And they've given us this opportunity to give the city of Chicago something really remarkable. It's truly one of the more special, like special rooms I've ever been in. And I know I'm biased, but I've been in a lot of venues and I've seen a lot of shows, and from the sound and the lights and the food, it's really a feast for the senses. And
It's an evening out, and it's such a hot neighborhood of Chicago. Again, Garcia Chicago is located at 1001 West Washington in Chicago. GarciaChicago.live, kind of an interesting website. Chicago, GarciasChicago.live is the place to go. Jesse, congratulations. I can't wait to check it out myself, but I'm going to have a roast beef sandwich, believe me, and one of those shakes because I'm going to wear my tie. So all of that's going to happen in tribute to Jerry Garcia. Thanks for joining me today. Hope everybody will check out Garcia's Chicago, and we'll be right back after these words with the cast of Art. And we are back here on Paul Listick Behind the Curtain, switching gears a little bit now to talk about just this wonderful play that is in town called Art. It's over at Theater Wit, put on by Remy Bumpo Theater Company, playing through June 1st. And it was a play written by Yasmina Reza, actually some time ago. It premiered on 1994, I think. It premiered on Broadway in 1998. We'll see whether my guests know who was in the original cast, but first let me introduce my guest to you. Playing the role of Mark is Justin Albinder. This is your Remy Bumpo debut, so good for you. Congratulations. But I noticed in your bio it said that you are New York based, but you have so many Chicago credits like Lord of the Rings and whatever. So do you live here or you live there?
It's a great question. Kind of everywhere. I found a fun little loophole. I found my way in Chicago for the last 2 years working here. I've gotten some really great opportunities, so thank you, Marty. So kind of both.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you were in beautiful at Marriott, and so you've just got all this great stuff going on. And you got to go to New Zealand, so make Chicago your home.
I
Same thing
did.
with Lord of the Rings with a lot of my other friends. You went out there and had a good time, so this is good.
Yes, I have
And
Chicago.
also, Joining us in the role of or plays the role of Serge is Chad Bay. Not your debut with Remy Bumpo, Chad. And also, I saw this. I know it was an understudy role, which are very important to a show. But you understudied Little Bear Ridge Road at Steppenwolf, which means you got to play with Laurie Metcalf and my friends over there. We did a show with that cast, so that was great fun. And did you get to go on?
I did not. Everybody in that cast stayed healthy through the run of the show, so none of the understudy. But we were ready to go, and it was an awesome experience to be a part of that.
All right. You're like Eleni Kazan, a funny girl. You can look that up. And joining us, Eduardo Curley, who plays the role of Yvonne. This is set in France. I got to get that right. Exactly. You have done Remy Bumpo before, and I love your bio because you're an award-winning ensemblist. I'm not sure I've seen that word before, but there it is. Play developer, music maker. Anyway, good to see you. Been at the Paramount, Goodman, and everywhere. And Marty Lyons, one of our great directors in the city. Love it that you are doing this show. You did Galileo's Daughter at Remy Bumpo before. You've been at Northlight, Geffen Playhouse. Man, you're all over the place. Looking Glass. So welcome to all of you. Let's get into the show. Marty, I'm going to start with you because I'm going to have you sort of tell us the plot of this show and what intrigued you about going back to Reza's show from the 90s to present it today.
Yeah, art is about three friends. One of them buys a piece of artwork, and that creates some contention in the group and a crisis of the friendship that they then have to spend the rest of the play wrestling with. I was attracted to this play because I think this question of the value of art is something that's very much in my mind right now, both as a director and artistic director. How do we value art as a culture? How do we value theater as a culture? But also because it's really funny, and it just seemed like a really nice way to enjoy the springtime in Chicago. It was a great process. It's a great show to see and sit in the theater for 90 minutes. And, you laugh, but it's also incredibly deep and moving. So for all those reasons, I wanted to do it.
Yeah. And I love the fact, is what you gave were the factual aspects of the play, but of course, as you say, it's about so much more than that, and about the friendship and the conflicts. And I think it's why I enjoyed it so much. Trivia question for anybody, maybe except Marty, but for the actors, who was in the original 1998 Broadway cast of this show? Because you'll know the names. Justin, take it.
Alfred Molina, Victor Garber, and Alan Alda.
Good job. And yeah, absolutely. You're all nodding. So you all, Chad, did you know?
I knew Alfred Molina. Okay. I remember that one.
And Victor Garber, who makes his return apparently in Titanic over the Broadway Playhouse, but that's such a strange thing. And yeah, you have to see that if you know to know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let me come to you, Chad, actually in playing Serge, your character. I just so love your character that I just want to start with you. You're a bit snobby, but tell us about who, and I'm sure it's not who you are, but tell us a little bit about Serge. You're the guy that bought the piece of artwork, which everybody always says is $200,000, but it actually takes place in Paris. It's really Frank's. So in today's economy, it's worth about $7.
Sure. Yeah. Serge, I wouldn't describe him as a snob, perhaps. But
we'll check that out with Justin and Eduardo, but go ahead.
Yeah. I see him as someone who really is passionate about the things in his life that he loves. And so as he comes into being a person who really values art and wants to be a part of that world, certainly there's he has a view of himself that he is elevating himself through this purchase, but in a way that feels incredibly authentic to him and makes him really excited. And so,
Chad, did he buy this piece of art because he loved this piece of art?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think so.
All right. Justin, how accurate was Chad's portrayal of Serge?
Chad doesn't have to do a ton of acting. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I enjoy his voice. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, it's a fascinating thing. I think one of the things that we've spoken about a lot in rehearsal is the fact that, especially with Serge and Mark, and of course, Yvonne in its own way, but, is that they believe they have these arguments and they have these issues because they believe they're right. Right. And at the end of the day, it's like as frustrated, as rude, as mean, as belittling as they get, especially with Mark, who comes off quite strident, it's because it means something here, and it's because he's right. He fully believes he's right. And so Chad can think what he likes about his portrayal of his character, and
Hey, and I'm the audience member, so I'll take it in the way I want. And by the way, I say that with total charm, Chad, because I love the character. And Eduardo, in playing Yvonne, I have to say, you, and your performance as I was sitting there, I thought, you're striking, who are you striking me like? And I don't know if you ever heard this before, maybe Marty, maybe I'm making this up, but you were very Nathan Lane to me. Is that, does that work for you at all? Is that like out of left field to you?
I love it. Nathan Lane is an acting hero. Is a hero of the American canon. That's a great compliment. Thank you.
And by the way, why it's a great compliment for you is because when I've interviewed Nathan Lane, I said to him that he reminded me of somebody. He thought I was going to say Zero Mostel, which is what he always gets, and it gets him angry. But actually, my answer was Gleason, Jackie Gleason. And to that, he said, actually, he's my hero. So I don't know whether Gleason is before your all time, but if not, look him up. He's good. So Eduardo, talk a little bit about Yvonne, and he's just trying to make peace.
He is just trying to make peace. I really see Yvonne as the heart of the play. I think that when it comes to matters of the heart, two things can be true. Mark can be right, and Serge can be right. And I think it's more important to Yvonne, maybe a little bit selfishly, because his wedding's coming up, and they're his witnesses. But still, I think that he just thinks that, you know, they can both be right, and why should that destroy the friendship, you know?
And Lord knows that Yvonne has his own issues going on.
Oh, absolutely. He's a bit of a martyr. He inherited that from his mother. And I think that, you know, the friendship is the hill he's willing to die on. I think he really wants these two to get along, even if it gives Mark heartburn and even if it makes Serge cringe.
You know, Marty, again, this is about art. And I have to say that, so there was a time in my life, I loved modern art. And so truthfully, we do see the painting here. So for our first, we do get to see it. And I'm looking going, okay, I might not pay $200,000 for it, but I could go for that. But then my tastes have changed. And so now my home is much more antique, much more, you know, kind of in that direction. So I'm sort of curious, as you directed this play, again, written in the 90s, when maybe pop art and more of that was a little more, how important is the nature of that art? Could it have been anything? Could that piece of art, aside from what the playwright says, but if you were holding up more traditional art, could this have still worked?
So much of the beauty of what Reza's crafted here is that there's a debate around the blankness in the work, but also some of the blankness on the canvas is the point of the work. Maybe. And so I think it has to be open-ended enough that we can each take our own journey to deciding what's happening there. And all of the characters in the play do take their own journey to that. But then I also think part of her brilliance is that as each of these characters try to put an end to it or help the situation or stand firm, or even moments of trying to de-escalate, they all end up escalating. They all end up throwing fuel on the fire, even when they have the best intentions. So I think whatever that piece of work is, it has to be in its own right, controversial enough that people can think they're trying to be helpful and end up adding fuel to the fire.
Briefly, so Chad and Justin, this question, who undergoes more change or transformation during the course of this play? Is it Serge or is it Mark? What do you think, Chad?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't want to speak for what Justin thinks, but I think Serge's journey of change is, I think, one of sort of coming to understand what has changed about his relationship with Mark and how what that really means in terms of the things they like. But I think Serge also reaches a point of feeling like we can have our differences and hopefully continue a friendship. I think he certainly goes on a journey there. And I personally think there is quite a journey for Mark as well, but Justin can speak to what that
it's
is.
It's interesting. I've never thought about who has a larger, you know, point A to point Z kind of thing going on, but certainly for Mark, and I think Marty beautifully directed it this way too, that at the very end of the show, it's a very clear, stark change for Mark. And we're not quite sure what that change is, except that there is a change, right? His mind has been changed. He's looking at the painting in a different way, and he says so. And I think that has to mean a big thing. It has to mean something.
And something dramatic happens in this. Sadly, we're at the end of time for this show, but I'm going to ask all of you to stay on for a little bit because we do, when this show broadcasts as a podcast, guest at the beginning of the week, we sometimes add a little bonus segment. So if you all have just a little bit of time, let's do a little bonus onto this show. And because I want people to know what it is that makes me ask the question that I just asked. But for our viewers, thank you for watching us today. Art is playing at the Remy Bumpo Theater at Theater Wit on Belmont through June 1st. You can get tickets at remybumpo.org. You don't want to miss it. Thanks for watching us here on Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next week. All right, and then welcome back to Behind the Curtain. This is our bonus part of the interview because the TV end ran out. So we're going to continue here. So just before the show ended, I asked Chad and Justin who had a greater metamorphosis throughout the course of the show. And there, you answered that. But here's the thing. And Justin, I'll come to you with this one, which is the reason for the metamorphosis for Justin, and I don't know if it's good or bad, is Justin, I'm not going to give it away. But Justin does something in the show that he's given the authority and the right to do that as an audience member, I went, wow, is that the choice Mark truly wants to make? You know what I'm talking about. You can give it away if you want to. But that's what made me think that Mark really remained, I'm not sure, changed, vengeful. I don't know what the word is to do what he does in the show.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's a provocateur. He likes to stir the pot. I think that's in his nature. And actually, it occurred to me the other day when Yvonne actually says, you're not going to do that, are you? That I think Mark hears that and it's like, oop, challenge accepted in a weird, twisted way. But it really strikes Mark that Serge gives him this opportunity. Serge invites him to do this. And because of the entire play, Serge and Mark have been like this. Mark says, here, see it this way. And Serge just puts him down and vice versa. And this is one of the first times where Serge sees it and goes, all right, go for it. Sure. Let's do this your way.
Yeah.
In a really twisted way. But I think Mark in his DNA will go, of course, I'm going to rise to the challenge. Right. And in doing so, it makes him think differently.
Notice, by the way, how you had to make sure you got the name Serge right, and yet you're not saying that you're a little snobby, Chad. Okay, not Chad, but Serge. Because Justin was like, I'm going to hear about this if I don't get this right. I am. This man is so snobby. Anyway, Marty, let me come back to you. So that moment we're talking about, which we are not saying what it is, but there is this great moment in the play. Is that, how do you as a director, I viewed that as I watched it as, it all led up to this. It led up to this moment. It's kind of the boom, the peak, and then boom, we'll see where it goes. How do you as a director address that moment? Or is it not as big a deal as I took it?
Yeah, you know, I had a professor in college, a poetry professor named Mike Tooney, and he writes about and talks about...
Not our WGN believes... Mike Tooney, is it?
No, Mike Tooney with an N.
Tooney, oh, okay.
Yeah. But he talks about how one of the best ends to a poem is a poem that ends in fitting surprise. So when you get there, you're surprised by it. But when you look back, it seems inevitable. And that, I think I'm always looking for that as the culminating experience of a piece, that there's something about it that in the moment feels completely like a discovery. But when you look back, everything's been leading to this conclusion. And I think Reza draws that perfectly. And I think our cast executes it perfectly.
And Marty, I just want to follow up with you on that for a moment, because the casting of this show, you know, when I wrote my review for the show, which was 4 stars, so don't anybody get mad at me. But he's kind of, what did he give us? But my opening line to it, which I think they actually use in the PRs, I recently saw it, which was the art of making art is putting it together. I didn't make that up. But Marty, the concept of putting it together, this casting is just, I thought, masterful. But can you, what went into your mind as you put each of the, because I can't see any of these guys in any different role. Can you just talk a little bit about that casting?
Yeah, well, this play is often cast with more mature actors. And as I was reading it, it felt
older, Justin.
it felt so like conversations and deep challenges and also superficial pettiness that I have with my long-term friends. And so even though we are perhaps a range of ages here, I felt interested in exploring this piece with a peer group, actually. I felt interested in what we might uncover. Eduardo is an ensemble member at Remy Bumpo. So Eduardo was a person that I first approached to see if he might like to do this, knowing his comedic genius and deep, deep heart. And then we went through a casting process, and we're just absolutely fortunate enough that these other two stars walked through the door, and that's how we landed on this great group.
It's so masterful, and Eduardo, let me come to you about that because you know the Remy Bumpo world, and so talk about how does this fit in when I think, 'cause I've seen several Remy Bumpo shows, and I never know what I'm going to get, but at the same time, I feel as though there's a certain level of quality of depth I'm going to get in the show. Why are you so involved in Remy Bumpo? What is it about the theater company that intrigues you?
Well, I was doing an interview for this show yesterday, and the thing that really strikes me about Remy Bumpo shows is that I feel like it's theater for nerds, like theater for literary nerds. And
Chad and Justin are now asking to get out of their contracts, but go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, they're full-fledged nerds now if they weren't before. So they're like reading Seneca, and we went to the Museum of Contemporary Art together. It was our first like friend date to bond over this play. It was awesome.
Went there. You didn't go to the Art Institute. You went to the Museum of Contemporary Art.
We still want to go to the Art Institute, but Justin's not an Illinois resident, so we're figuring it out.
They won't let him in? What is that?
Yeah. Well, we just want cheap tickets, you know.
Oh, okay. All right. Submitted as an expense. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Edward. Do I catch up?
Yeah, no. I think that's something you can rely on from Remy Bumpo shows. The last show we did, Dear Elizabeth, was about the relationship between two long-term, lifelong friends who were poets and their letters back and forth to each other by Sarah Rule. This is about art, how we perceive art, how it affects our life and our friendships, as well as, you know, it is heightened language. It's translated from French to British English, but one of my lines is about climbing the penitential stair. You know, like it takes effort and expertise to make sure that language comes through us as the ensemble and hits the audience's ear in a way that they understand it, and that doesn't feel highfalutin, that people understand the discussion and the dispute that is happening in front of them.
You know what, Marty, I just have one last question for you based on that. I'm sorry, but this show is set in Paris. Does it have to be? I'm thinking of like Full Monty, which was set in England, but you know, in the Broadway show they went, let's move it to Jersey. Could you have said, we're going to set this in the United States? Would it have worked?
Well, you know, the design, I think, leaves it open a bit to interpretation. Yes, all the references are French and period specific, but that's because, we licensed the play such as it is, but also because trying to change all of that just felt like an enormous task, and sort of to what end. Reza's very clear about the theatricality. She says that it is a white set, that the only thing that changes on the set as we move between their different homes is the painting. So I think, you know, yes, ostensibly it's Paris in the 90s, but I also think we can read into it what we'd like.
Thank you. Chad, why are you three friends? I mean, think about it. You've got neurotic, you know, Yvonne over here, you know, and Mark's got kind of a chip going on his show, whatever. And then you're who you are. Why are you guys friends? Or is there a history? What is your history that brought you together, do you think?
This is something we talked a lot about in rehearsal. And I think something we talked about, given the ages that we are, the 15-year friendship kind of puts us all maybe like right in like college time as a time of when we would have met and created friendship. So I think it's a really interesting exploration as someone who is the age of these characters, thinking about like the friends you have in college, the person you are at that time is someone a little bit different than maybe the person you are 15 years later. And I think the play sort of sets up this really excellent exploration of what is that like when you have three people who've been friends for 15 years, half their life, or a little bit less or more, whatever, And now suddenly there's a change in values. There's a change in dynamic that's stressing the friendship and testing the bonds. And I think certainly I can think back to college. Some of the close friends I had then are people, some of them are people I'm still friends with now. Some of them are people I would never be friends with. And I think there's a lot to that when you're young and you're finding people that excite you with ideas that you think are challenging for the sorts of three guys these three are. I can totally see how they would find yings with each other's yangs and make a little posse out of the three of them.
I love it. Well, I'd like each of you to chime in on that, Justin. So Chad has made it clear that he's much older than all of you. What do you think? What do you think has brought the three of you together?
Yeah, I mean, backpacking right off what Chad said, I think especially in places, an environment like college or high school or a job, right, where like you're there for a certain period of time, right, you build these relationships and you're developing your identity within that ecosystem, right? You start to cling to the people whose roles start to be very clear in your friend group. And so, like you said, you know, Yvonne being, you know, more of the funny guy and Mark being more of the provocateur and Chad being the one with taste and stirring the conversation, whatever that is, like, you know, you start to enjoy the pieces of the puzzle that you've created with these people. I had a friend that came and see the show opening night and she said, I loved it. It was great. She goes, you know, it really hit me in a weird way. She's like, I'm now a new mother. I have friends in my life that I look at our relationship and I go, why are we friends? After all these years, why are we like, what actually binds us together to use her text? But it's true. I think it is so interesting to see this play done by men who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s. But I think it's equally as interesting to see people around our age that are starting to ask that question. Mm-hmm. You know, we're at the start of like, who are these people to me in my life and why?
You know, and Eduardo, before I come to you to answer that question for your character, what you made me think of, Justin, as you said that, was Betrayal, just done at the Goodman Theater. Because if you had a chance to see that with Helen Hunt and Robert Sean Leonard, who appeared on this show, you can go back and see that interview if you'd like. But the point was, that too was set with, they were meant to be much older characters. And they're not. And that's just what the director chose to do. I guess if you get Helen Hunt and Robert Sean Leonard, you just... You know, sorry, they're meant to be much younger characters,
younger characters.
And they went older in the casting. Because I guess when you get those stars, you do it. And Jan Barford, I want to give him his due as well. Eduardo, so when you think of the characters here, it is sort of interesting because your character for me, it's the Nathan Lane, it's the comedy and all of that. But for me, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but among the maturity of the three, you have such a quagmire in life going on. It's almost as though your character has not yet matured to the level of everybody else just because of all the things going on in his life. So with that said, why are these guys your friends? It looks like you're begging them to stay your friends, please.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. And I think that it's for him, it's about maintaining the equilibrium, whether or not it was an equilibrium that benefited all three of them or that all three of them want to be in. I think that it's really necessary for him to keep that equilibrium. I think that part of it is the nostalgia. Part of the reason they stay friends is the nostalgia. It's very clear to me, at least, I think we talked about in Table Work at the beginning of the play, that they haven't really been seeing each other as much. They've been growing apart over some time. And in the argument that Mark and Serge have about Serge's new friends and new ideals and why he feels that that's leaving him behind, that's apparent, you know, that we're sort of moving on to the next part of life. But for Yvonne, I think it's this thing of like, oh, these are my two best friends. One is married. One is now married and divorced with kids. And Yvonne was always kind of his only relevance to the friendship was in this format, in this shape where the three of them hang out together and he makes them laugh. And I think that it's hard for him to leave that behind so much so that, you know, he's really had to deal with a lot of loneliness and that's why he's now getting married and he just wants his friends to support him.
Yeah. By the way, Chad, I might have misread something in the show. I viewed Serge. I thought Serge was gay and because I thought there were references to a husband and kids. So I thought it was a gay relationship. Is that not right?
Yes. No, that's correct.
Yep. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Because when Eduardo said, well, married with kids and whatever, and I thought, But because it's interesting, because the fact that it's a gay relationship, and what I love about this is it's just irrelevant to this. You know, I mean, you got to listen for it to hear it, I suppose. But like, it's like, who cares? And the fact that if that was the text back in the 90s, I guess that's a good thing to see, I suppose. Well, actually, let me ask you. So does that, am I reading that right for you? I mean, is it an issue for Sarah's that that's part of his character, or it really doesn't matter?
No, I mean, that was sort of a choice we made for this production. And I think the sort of the choice to have Serge be gay, and sort of we changed the pronunciation of the spouse's name so that it would read this way. Really, to me, it brings the character a little closer to the person that I am. But I think it also pokes some interesting holes in who Serge is and the things he values. Because to me, the idea of a young professional gay man who gets married, adopts children, and then gets divorced, that's a lot of intentional things to do in your life in very rapid succession.
There's a sequel in this when you talk about that.
Yeah. And then to then look at it as like, and now he's probably paying a lot of, you know, money to his ex to take care of the kids. But then he's also investing this money in this art, which is something that his friend Mark really hates. And he's trying to keep these relationships together. I think it, to me, it just added a lot to the character that I could really relate to, but I think also is something that's not important to the plot, but certainly is just another layer. It's something that fuels it for me, certainly.
By the way, one last question for you. So much, I mean, all of you have a lot of varied backgrounds and a lot of Shakespeare, but I really noticed the incredible amount of Shakespeare that you have, Chad, in your background. So I'm sort of curious, is that, do you view yourself as, I like being a Shakespearean answer and I'll, Shakespearean actor, and I'll break out from that? Or is this just, it doesn't matter to you? It's just, and does the Shakespeare experience feed you? With all due respect, because I know you all have Shakespeare in your background, but.
Certainly. I think Shakespeare is really wonderful. It's a great challenge. I love being a student of Shakespeare. I love it in the classroom. It's just my life has panned out that I've done it a lot in performance, but I really love digging into contemporary modern plays. I think I really love language, but I love applying that skill and that interest to modern language. And so I look forward to opportunities to continue doing that as well.
All right. And I don't mean to cut you out, Justin. I mean, what theatrical influences are there on you? What feeds you when you get a role?
Yeah. Actually, for me in particular, I have very little Shakespeare background. I did a Shakespeare play in high school, and other than that, there hasn't been a whole lot, which I wish there were more. I actually come from a mostly musical theater background prior to this, which is funny considering that in college I viewed myself as more of an actor than I did any of the other elements. And just because of how my career has panned out and the world the way it is, I've just been doing more musical theater, and that's kind of the path that I've gone down. But it's been a really great joy to be able to dig into such a beautifully written play, but a play where text is paramount, and to be doing it with, you know, two other phenomenal actors is just a real treat and a challenge. And being able to flex some muscles that I haven't flexed in a little bit of time. You know, oftentimes musicals, you get lucky if the book is written really, really well, right? And so this is a book that is just so good because it is the book, right? Yeah, it's just been a really great joy.
So your mentor was not Spencer Milford?
What's that?
Your mentor was not Spencer from Lord of the Rings?
Oh, Spencer. Good All buddy. Right. No, it was getting, listen, getting to do Lord of the Rings was a real treat. You know, 3.5-hour extravaganza. So what a fun contrast it has been to do a play in 85 minutes. So
I mean, and again, to go to New Zealand with it, that is, my understanding is you guys are booked for Boise, Idaho. But other than that, this is...
It was incredible. And like, and I mean, the show itself was a beast and a true joy to work on. But that really sealed the deal. Yeah. And that show, you know, in its own way was Shakespearean. It was, you know, enormous and grand and so much story that had to be given very clearly in moments. So, you know, and with music and dancing and playing instruments and stage combat. I mean, it was just crazy. So getting to do something like this, it's a totally different experience, but there was a lot to bring from one to the other. And there's a lot more nuance and fun little beats to play, I think.
Yeah. By the way, I saw Lord of the Rings on opening night, and I the fantasy stuff goes over my head. I don't know what it is. It doesn't register with me. And my partner sitting next to me, he's looking at me, he's kind of going, "You're not following this, are you?" And then, but here's what was great. Later, somebody said, "What is it about?" And I began to tell them, and he looked at me and went, "That's Lord of the Flies. What are you talking about?" So, hopeless. And Eduardo, let's close it up with you. Basically, so is comedy is a lot of what you do there, but I mean, Is that your, especially because I know you're a play developer, I assume that means playwright, unless it means something else, but is how much does drama call to you?
You know, it's funny. The past couple of years, I've been getting hired basically to do a lot of clown work. Before that, I was always playing really tragic roles. Like, and all of a sudden, I've had the great opportunity to do you know, something like this. That's a little bit more a little bit more comedic, more ensemble based comedy. Same. This is the thing that I love to do, is have great actors work on a great play together, whether it be a new play and doing play development, or something from the 90s, or you know, a Shakespeare piece from 500 years ago. That's the hard stuff right there.
Well, this show is really well done. If people want to get a sense of what the set is, it looks like, just look at Justin's background right now. It's as close as we can get to the show. That's the best we got. It sure doesn't look like anybody.
Plain.
And one picture. And one picture.
Yeah, really.
Thank you, everybody, for joining me once again. For those who have stayed with us for the bonus, and I'm sure that's most people, that is the show is running until June 1st at the Theater Wit. Remy Bumpo Theater Company is doing it. The show is Art. It's fabulous. RemyBumpo.org is where you can get your tickets. Thank you all for joining me. And be sure you see Art. We'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye-bye, everybody.
Oh.